Hello and welcome to the Eat Local New York podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Tringale, and I'm really excited about this week's episode because I have Nick and Joel from Strong Hearts sitting in the studio, being guests, chatting on the podcast. I'm really excited about this. If you're in the food world, if you are on Instagram, if you care any little small iota about the food scene in Syracuse, then you know and are familiar with Strong Hearts. I've been familiar with Strong Hearts, at least in the social aspects, since Eat Local New York started. I had the opportunity to first meet Joel a couple of years ago when we did, I did a 7-day vegan challenge. And with that, I wanted to put out weekly content, or actually daily content, about that. I vlogged about it. I went down to Strong Hearts and interviewed Joel for a few minutes. I did a podcast with a friend of mine who's been vegan for a number of years. That was the first time that I ever stepped foot in Strong Hearts, first time I ever met or spoke with Joel. And I've really just had a great admiration for Nick and for Joel and for their business ever since then. And that continues today, even maybe more so after getting to sit down and talk with them for the hour that I got to talk with them today. Just two great individuals operating a, in my opinion, very wonderful business right here in Syracuse. And I've said it on the podcast, I'm saying it again now, I think Syracuse is better because they exist. As a matter of fact, I know it is. And so again, I am just so grateful that I was able to sit down and talk with them. And I hope that you enjoy this podcast and enjoy this conversation. And if you don't know anything about them, maybe you'll learn more something about them now. And most importantly, go check them out. Go visit Strong Hearts. Find them on Instagram. Find them online. But go down to the restaurant. Go sit down and have a meal or order it for takeout or for delivery. But go check them out. I can't say anything more about them. And I'm not going to. If you're not a subscriber to the Eat Local New York podcast, then maybe you should consider it. In the podcasting world, two of the most important things are subscribers and reviews. And so if you're not a subscriber, do us a huge favor and consider subscribing to the podcast and whatever platform that you're listening to this on. You can also head over to our YouTube channel and subscribe on our YouTube channel where we put out the video version of every single podcast episode. We also release new and original content. We have a great show called Will It Ferment, hosted by Tim from Buried Acorn Brewery and Keith from Woodland Farm Brewery, where the two sit down and take everyday items to find out, will it ferment? Can they make alcohol out of things like instant rice? Can they make alcohol out of old Christmas sugar cookies or maybe a Christmas wreath or candy? Can they take Sour Patch Kids and make it into consumable alcohol? We don't know when we start the episodes, but we find out by the end of them. So you'll be able to catch all the new episodes of Will It Ferment. You can also check out our other show, Hoagies Heroes, hosted by me and my co-host Zach Cavallo, where we take a different item of food each week, talk about the history of it, and then pit two local restaurants against each other to see who makes the better version of it. Our latest episode, we just sat down and tried stretch bread from Possibilities in the Patisserie out in Skinny Atlas and talked about the history of that bread, that wonderful, wonderful bread that Central New York is known for. So you can head over to our YouTube channel, subscribe there, catch all of our video content. Well, that's all I got for you. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Nick and Joel from Strong Hearts. All right, well, we're sitting here with Nick and Joel from Strong Hearts. I'm going to pull up my questions. So thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've talked about it for a while. And, you know, 2020 and 2021, the COVID years, have really been great opportunities for me to sit down with substantial people in Syracuse and the restaurant industry on the podcast. I mean, you two, I consider you guys to be substantial get for the podcast.
Well, we take that as a compliment for sure. I don't know if we would include ourselves in that list, but
definitely.
Yeah, we've always kind of viewed ourselves as outsiders a little bit. We came into the restaurant business without any experience or knowledge. It was just passion.
Yeah.
And it's been a learning experience, and I guess we're starting to feel like we're part of it for sure, but it's like still there's plenty of people who know a lot more about it than we do. And we've just kind of been learning from those people and getting the hang of it that way.
Yeah. What is that like? I mean, I was talking to Sarah Morris recently. We had her on the podcast, and they've kind of felt that way a little bit, like outsiders in the industry, in the restaurant industry in Syracuse.
Yeah. And, you know, I say that not meaning that there's anything that's happened that's made us feel that way, but it's just like we did come into it with no clue what we were doing. And I know like what we were doing for a while was just pull yourself up by the bootstraps.
Yeah.
And when we started getting people to come work for us who had been in other restaurants, they'd be like, hey, like, here's some ideas on how you can do things. And like, some of the insider stuff that we wouldn't have known because we had never been in other restaurants. So, that's kind of what I mean by that. And it was, so it's not like anyone has really shunned us necessarily.
Right.
It's just that we know that we're coming at it from a different angle. Yeah.
I mean, but you know, a lot of times you'll look for another example, in like the industry, especially when you're starting out. And in Syracuse, was there another vegan-friendly restaurant that you could look to as kind of like the way to go?
No. I mean, there wasn't a vegan restaurant at the time back in 2008. I think Sugar Pearl on Burnett Ave was the closest. They were like a vegetarian-ish restaurant.
Yeah.
But I think the guy who helped us the most, if you remember, Christian from Roji. We sat down with Christian before we opened Strong Hearts, and he was supremely helpful to us, and just to kind of give us some confidence and basic do's and don'ts. But other than him, there really wasn't anybody that like we looked to for guidance at that time.
Mm. Roji was a tough loss for the pandemic.
Super huge loss. Yeah. Such a bummer.
Yeah. That was, I felt like, I don't know if it's 'cause I'm from here, but, I love Syracuse and Central New York and everything, but there's some of our artistic areas like that I feel like we have a long way to go. But I felt like Roji was like the successful artistic expression in Syracuse.
100%. When I went to Roji back in the day, I felt like I wasn't in Syracuse.
Right.
And that was a huge inspiration to us opening our new shop. I wanted that same feeling. I wanted people to walk in and feel like, am I in Syracuse still?
Right. Yeah. And I'd say, I mean, I said this to you yesterday when I was there, I would say being in your kitchen, and doing that video and just seeing the operation. I mean, there's great, phenomenal operations in Syracuse, but those are very few, and seeing the organization, that existed in your kitchen yesterday was like mind-boggling to me. I did not expect to walk in. I mean, this is the most sincerest compliment ever. I did not expect to see that. I expected to see kind of like a deli, like kind of sandwich shop vibe, but that was, I would put it on the highest level of organization I've seen in a kitchen in Syracuse.
That's a huge compliment. Thank you. I mean, you would have had a 180 different view of our operation just a year ago at Genesee. And we made do there for a while in a space that was too small and too old and all that. And we worked for a while and put a lot on the line to get to where we're at and to upgrade the kitchen. And we applied a lot of learning from our past mistakes and, you know, like over the years we had documented all the things that we would want if we were ever to upgrade, and that upgrade finally came and we're super happy with it. And it's nice to get your perspective because we've been in it now for a while in this new space. We moved in July last year. We're kind of like, now this is routine. Like we take it for granted now almost. And it's nice to to get that compliment because we don't really see other kitchens right now and know what else is going on. But we're happy with what we got. We're happy with how things are going right now, and we're looking to continue to improve.
Yeah. So what year did you start the restaurant?
It was
2008.
Yeah.
Wow. And I mean, you've kind of already said it, but you weren't in the restaurant industry before that.
No, I was fresh out. Well, I was a year out of college, and I'd worked in a dining hall. That's the extent of my experience.
Yeah.
And I had washed dishes in a diner up in Central Square where I grew up for a few months. That was the extent of my restaurant experience back when I was 15.
Yeah. How did you two meet?
We met at when I was a student at SU. We started an animal rights group there, and Joel came in with a couple other people from the community, non-students. Joel had been an activist for a long time, longer than me, and came in. They brought a lot of knowledge, and just our group kind of grew from there. It was called SARO, Syracuse Animal Rights Organization. Okay. Took on a life of its own a little.
Yeah.
We did a lot of the usual kind of like protest things, standing outside of the fur shop, holding the signs. We'd give out brochures and literature. Mm-hmm. We'd also have a lot of potlucks and things like that, you know, like kind of the fun end of it.
Yeah.
So we met doing that stuff. And
I remember those potlucks. I'm pretty sure that's where the egg trick muffin came from, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I mean,
remember making that in Kev Frog's kitchen?
Yeah, that actually came from a girl I met at the potlucks. Anna was a recipe she showed me. We cooked that up, and egg trick muffin became a staple on our menu once we first opened. But yeah, we had potlucks when I was in college at our crappy apartment. I think at its peak, we had like 50 something people in there.
Oh, wow.
You know, crazy to think about in this current time, but we were just jammed in there, just all sharing food. And a lot of the kind of seeds of Strong Hearts came from that, where people getting together, and not all of them were vegan. You know, a lot of the people there would be vegans, but there were, you know, just other kind of like-minded, alternative, kind of punk, hardcore people hanging out, eating food. It was all vegan, the potlucks, and with, you know, that's not exactly where Strong Hearts came from, but it kind of planted the idea that as we're holding the signs and maybe not really getting any traction, it started to feel like maybe we're not really achieving anything by holding these signs. We're kind of just patting our own back and preaching to the choir. Saw more change from sharing good food with people. I mean, people become more open, you know, you're just, you're hanging out with people. You're introducing them to what you eat and what you believe in in a less confrontational way. It's just going to be more effective, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So that kind of became the root idea of Strong Hearts, is that we were activists. We wanted to continue our activism, but in a different way. And also we were kind of both, not really on a career track anywhere. We didn't have anything tying us down, no family obligations or anything like that at the time. The opportunity was ripe for us to just pour ourselves into something like a restaurant.
Yeah.
And the idea was that we wanted to share with the greater community the things we were doing in potlucks like that, where get to people's hearts and minds through their stomach.
That's there's a lot of lights are firing in my brain as you were just saying that like connect me to like growing up in church, because I was just thinking of, like, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking of like the people that go out there that protest in the name of, you know, Christianity and all that kind of stuff, and then the people that try to start some sort of a like community center or, you know, whatever to try and, trying to start, like, I've known plenty of Christians who have like started like coffee shops, and they're like, oh, we're just going to make it like this place for people to come and experience, you know, peace and love and all those great and wonderful things. But I've never met someone on that side of it that's ever succeeded at it, you know? And then hearing you talk about that, I'm like, I'm sure that wasn't your direct intention, was to let's start this restaurant where we can bring people in and just educate them through food and spending time together. But I think that's in a very small part kind of what it is. I mean, since the first video that I did with you at the old location, like, what was that, like 2 or 3 years ago? When I did that like 7-day challenge, I've started shifting and thinking about all of those things, like thinking about what are we buying, you know, that, you know, we shouldn't be buying. What are we consuming that we shouldn't be consuming? What can we do better? And I have those connections really just through Strong Hearts.
That's really great to hear.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you said you don't think it was an intentional move. It kind of was from the beginning. Like in our initial conversations before opening the doors, it was, how can we introduce vegan food to non-vegan people? Okay. How can we get non-vegan people in the door? And part of that was, we're not going to put vegan in the title. We'd been around, traveled quite a bit. And in LA, the thing at that time, at least, I don't know what's going on there now, but at that time, all the vegan restaurants, it seemed, had like vegan this in the name. And it's like, we didn't want to do that in Syracuse because we thought it would just keep people from even trying it.
Yeah.
Not that we were hiding that we're serving vegan food, but we didn't want it to keep people from even looking at the menu or thinking about it. And the things we put on the menu, the milkshakes, the cupcakes, like they're delicious.
Yeah.
That's the point. And they're delicious in a way that's going to be an easier, you know, crossing into the vegan realm for first timers, you know, like my 90-year-old grandpa drink a chocolate shake and enjoy it. And it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter what's in it. It's good.
Yeah, for sure. I was saying that yesterday. I love the fact that it's, and I noticed that, we've ordered Grubhub a couple times from Strong Hearts at Gerhard's, really me and Anthony D'Onofrio. And we were commenting on that one time. It was like just loving the fact that it's not, that it's like a chicken Parmesan sandwich, that it's not like a vegan chicken Parmesan sandwich, you know, and the flavor profiles and everything are really on point. I've never had anything at Strong Hearts where I've thought, oh, this isn't the real thing, you know, normal. It tastes more like normal food, for lack of a better way to say that. And I really love that about it. I was saying, like, nice biscuits. I did a day in the life video with them, and I didn't know until I walked in there and they were telling me that they were a vegan biscuit shop. Until I walked, and they were pulling out the, you know, the tofu from the deli container that it had been soaking in. And I was like, I thought you were making a chicken sandwich. Like, what is that? They're like, oh, we're completely vegan. I was like, I had no idea until, and I had sampled the food and still had no clue that they were a complete vegan spot. It's really impressive, I think, that, you know, to accomplish that. Because we have a friend who's prepared vegan dishes for us, and they've been absolutely awful in the past. I mean, was that like a big deal for you in like developing the first menu for Strong Hearts, was to try and make it as appealing to others as possible?
I would say yes. Yeah, I mean, that's very intentional. Like Nick said, we wanted to appeal to omnivores primarily and not strictly vegans.
Yeah.
We knew the vegans were going to come in because we're the only game in town. And, you know, if we were vegan in Syracuse and there was a vegan cafe, we would have gone to it. Yeah. So we already had that crowd.
Yeah.
We were reaching out to the omnivores, people who weren't vegan or vegetarian and just wanted good food.
Yeah.
And that was the way we built the menu.
Right. Yeah. How has the menu developed over the years? I mean, has it changed pretty significantly, or has it stayed the same?
In some ways, it's changed quite a bit. A lot more in recent years than prior. Well, in the first 3 days, it changed a lot. When we our eyes were a little too big when we first opened. We had things like mashed potatoes and gravy. And I think it was good, but we were not big enough to do that, let alone the other things we were doing. One of the big things is we did breakfast all day for quite a while.
Okay.
And that was kind of a big part of what we did, but it got to the point where we were busier and busier and really started to see head on how that was affecting just operations, like why people don't do that, you know, like it's just too much. And so we cut that down a little, and things have shifted a lot during the pandemic. And in our new shop, we've opened the floodgates for a lot of new opportunities menu wise. We've added things like mac and cheese and nachos, and done some special events with more like entrees and appetizers. Kind of we coursed out a Valentine's dinner a few weeks ago. That was like a whole new ball game for us. So we've been working in those departments, but a lot of the changes have been, I mean, there's been a lot of kind of bigger industry changes in what's available product wise. You're looking for like Beyond Meat. I mean, that's a huge one, where before that the burgers available were kind of trash. I mean, they're good, we ate them, but to put them on a menu just didn't really feel like it was worth it. And once those became readily available, that opened up some things. And there's plenty of other products like that that have developed over time. I mean, even in things like mayonnaise, vegan mayonnaise being out there, there's a wealth of options now. And back in the day, it was just one. So, and back in the day, I mean, 2008, it's a while ago now, but over that, the 13 years, it's been a lot of development.
Yeah. I mean, mainstream, especially to hear more and have so many more options. Up until I just recently canceled my Sirius satellite subscription, because really all I was listening to in the radio was podcasts or Howard Stern, and then podcasts just pretty much took over. But Stern is a massive proponent of the Beyond Meat and or any of those products. I don't think Beyond Meat that brand specific, but and he's constantly talking about them for like the last year or two on his radio show. And doing ads for them. And so I think just getting it out to so many more people. And then you have massive chains like Burger King and others that, you know, started putting it on their menus. There's a lot of great options that are readily available today.
Yeah, and that's part of a larger cultural shift that's been going on over the course of that time period that has made it, I mean, just with celebrities saying they're eating vegan and this and that, that has a big effect. And we see like just a lot more people trying it out
and
willing to give it a shot. And we feel now a lot less questions about what is vegan, what does it mean, what's tofu, those kind of things. Like when we first opened, it was every other customer, what's tofu, what's seitan? And we still get it, but people are a lot more informed, and there's 100 reasons why, but it's just more culturally relevant.
Yeah. Do you hate getting those questions?
No.
I mean, not getting those questions like, what's tofu? But how do you feel about, like, I'll talk from my perspective. I always, when I know I'm going to be in Strong Hearts or talk to Joel, because it's the first time we've ever met, Nick. I'm thinking to myself, okay, what would I say that may or may not be offensive, and how do I not say that? You know, like, and I'm considering, like, what am I wearing? Do I have any animal products on my body that I should not have on? Right, like I say that, and I just realize my watch band is leather, or maybe it's fake leather because it was a cheap watch. But like, I'm constantly thinking about that stuff. And I don't know if I'm the minority, if I'm like the one person that feels that way, that comes in and eats, that's not a vegan person.
Those things don't even come into my mind.
Okay.
Like, I don't look at your shoes or your belt or your watch band. That's just, it's a non-factor.
Cool.
Most of our customers are not vegan.
Yeah.
And that's what we want.
Yeah. You know? Right.
Come into our restaurant wearing leather shoes. We don't care.
Yeah.
You know, you're eating a vegan meal. That's good enough for us.
Yeah. All right, good. That makes me feel better.
Yeah. And I mean, those questions don't bother us. I mean, maybe in the moment, some days he catch us in the wrong mood and anything would bother us. But yeah. We train people to like be able to answer those questions and to approach it as like, that's part of your job is to introduce these ideas to people. And not all of our staff are vegan either. That's part of it. We have plenty of staff who aren't even close to vegan, but when they're in the building, they're representing it. They're educating other people on what we're offering and what the ideals of the company are.
Yeah.
And we're never pushing it on people, but that's our whole intention is to inform people. So keeping that perspective on things is important.
Yeah. What was the, what were the shifts for you personally? Like when did you kind of in your lives come to the realization that, maybe eating meat and buying those products that are animal products, that's something you didn't want to do any longer?
For me, it happened back in high school, which I'm going to date myself here. It was a long time ago. I went vegetarian in 1992 and vegan in 1993. So it's been quite a long time for me. Mm-hmm. For me, it was through the music scene, through the underground punk hardcore music scene. Bands like Earth Crisis, which is a local Syracuse hardcore band, introduced me to messages of animal rights, and it really resonated with me at that time in my life, and that was kind of like the first stepping stone into this lifestyle for me. And the more I read and the more I learned and the more I researched, and back then it actually was research, it was like sending away for literature and getting it in the mail and reading it, the more it made sense to me, and the more I realized I didn't want to harm animals and didn't have to.
Yeah.
The decision for me to be vegan and not eat cows and pigs and chickens is just as easy for you not to eat your dog Buddy.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's not something you got to think about, and like you wouldn't eat your dog or your cat. And I feel the same way about cows and pigs and chickens.
Yeah.
So, and that thankfully for me, it happened when I was 15 years old and I just turned 44. So it's, this isn't, this isn't a trend. This isn't a fad or a phase for me. This is like a foundation of my life. And I take it very seriously.
Yeah. Has it been hard at any point, to continue to care about that?
If anything, I care more now about it. The more that I see that animals have the capacity to have deep, rich, emotional, social lives.
Yeah.
It, there's videos I watched, 25 years ago that I simply can't bring myself to watch anymore. It's just too graphic. It hurts me too much. I think I'm more committed now than I ever have been, having a restaurant and having that vegan message out there in front of people, it's super important to me. It's like the most important thing in my life. So it's not a challenge at all to still care. It's just become part of who I am.
Yeah. We watched, I watched the Super Size Me, the second one that he put out. And that was very eye-opening for me. Especially, I don't know if you saw that one or not, but
I saw the first one.
So in the second one, he basically creates a chicken restaurant, his version of a Chick-fil-A. But he hires the mega million-dollar branding companies and marketing companies and develops this brand, figures out the colors that will work the best and the keywords and the imagery and everything. And then he goes and explores what it would take to become a chicken farmer, to raise his own chickens for the restaurant, and goes and rents out, or however they do it in the farming industry, but basically finds a chicken farmer, gets the whole building, purchases 1,000 or however many baby chicks, hires this farmer to raise them, and then he'll go and check in from time to time. And then through his meetings with his branding company, he realizes that he has to use the words free range chickens in order to get more customers to feel good about eating it. And so he then explores, at the time they're just in this dark, massive, building. And so he goes and learns what it takes to get that, be able to use that title free range. And it turns out that that title, to have that title, like, governmentally, you know, to be able to officially use that title free range in this huge football field sized building, for the chickens to be considered free range, all he has to do is basically give them a space the size of this table that they can have access to the outside, still fenced in and covered. And that is all you have to do to use the word free range.
It's virtually meaningless.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And he opens this restaurant, and there's these massive lines of people, and he has, like, you know, free range and big bold letters on one wall. And, they take the cooked chicken breast and they paint, with charcoal, like what looks like grill marks on it through a spatula. So that way, it, you know, all this kind of stuff. But then on the table tents on each table, it says, it's like the real story. It says, we used green because studies show that people are more responsive to the color green in food. And the word free range that's in big, bold letters, you know, studies show that you feel better about that. But in reality, you know, the chickens only have to have this little space. And so he, like, does everything that works in the food industry with marketing, but then tells people, like, the real like, you know, all the details of it. So it was pretty interesting. That was, and I've seen, like, the documentaries of, you know, like, you know, chicken production and egg production and just how terribly those animals are treated. And so during in the spring, I don't know how I got my wife to agree to do this, but we decided to have chickens in the backyard. And so we got 10 baby chicks, and we were trying to figure out, like, how are we going to do it? How can we, you know, take care of them? And they have, you know, kind of like a good life, not be in some factory, and that we can, with our time and everything else that we have going on, still take care of them. And it, I am amazed at how much we've connected, especially me, to those animals, like they're pets. I mean, they're chickens, but it's amazing to see, like, we go in and out of we use our back door, to enter our house all the time. We don't use the front door, and our coop is back there and their run that they have. And so every time that I, like, go out the back door, they come, like, running to the fence, you know, waiting to, like, you know, get treats or see me or whatever. And we have them, we have a pretty big yard, and they have a big chicken run. But in the summertime, I bring them outside if I'm home, and let them, like, run around and stuff. And so we have our neighbor on, you know, it's maybe 40, 50 yards away on the other side. And so I was over there hanging out with the chickens, and the neighbor was like, oh, you know, oh my God, it's so cool to see the chickens out. So I started walking over to the fence to talk to the neighbor, and I was like 30 yards away from him. I was like, come on, girls. And they all started, like, running, just like, you know, our dog Buddy would if I had called him. It was just, it's so amazing to see, you know, how we can interact with them and not keep them locked up in a dark cage for their entire lives.
It's interesting to hear you make those connections because you've seen it with your own eyes now.
Yeah.
You know, the intelligence and the personality and the sentience that you see in the chickens that you have, all animals have that.
Right, yeah.
All animals that we eat have that.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think most people understand that and would, you know, come to the same conclusion, but there's routine, there's just convenience, there's what you don't see. Like, people don't seek out those PETA videos and the videos of what the factory farms are like because it's hard to swallow.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like, it makes you have to examine what you're doing and what you're eating. And I think most people facing that head on, thinking about it, are going to say, well, factory farms aren't right.
Yeah.
And maybe there's, like, free range, like, literal free range.
Yeah.
Grow your, like, have your own small farm, do something like that. Doesn't mean you have to go vegan, but find a more humane way.
Yeah, and for sure.
there's so much money in it. There's so much, you know, politics and lobbying and all that behind it all that it seems like a tough battle. Like, is it ever going to be over? But
yeah,
at some point, do we look back when we don't have factory farms and say, what the hell were we doing? Yeah. Like, how is that? How do we live with ourselves doing that, you know?
Yeah. I don't know how things are going to shape up with the pandemic, hopefully coming to an end. From buying hat patterns that I'm seeing, like, now over the past, like, I'd say a month and a half, at least in our industry, I feel like things are going back to the way they were. Like, people are still ordering a lot of takeout and delivery. But I'm also seeing and hearing restaurants that are just slammed busy all the time now because people just want to get out and go do something, which is great. I love that. I'm in that group. I just want to get out and do something. I was, I had a lot of realizations yesterday with my visit to Strong Arts. And another one of them that I had on the way home, I was just thinking to myself, like, we live in a world where there is a disease that just shut the entire globe down. And so many, you know, just like the realization of, like, what life has become in the last year. I've had that same moment like three times since last year. And yesterday was one of them. It was just like so weird to to really think about everything that's been happening. But I was hoping that we would see some sort of big change in the restaurant industry as a result of all this, whether it was restaurants finding ways to do things differently, more like a stronger emphasis on takeout or whatever it is. I just wanted to see some sort of like a big change in our industry. I don't think we're going to get that from this. It's not over. Maybe there will be. Maybe there's somebody building something now that I just don't know about that will usher in a change into the restaurant and food service industry. But I just haven't seen it yet. I forget my point in saying that, except for the fact that I just haven't seen it. But I hope that there is. Oh, I'm hoping that that people like my wife and I stop thinking outside of our community when it comes to this stuff, especially when it comes to like growing your own food or taking care of like your town, your community, the people in it. That is something that we've really noticed about ourselves in all of this is, you know, kind of shrinking our space and our influence and trying to bring things more local in what we do, what we buy, you know, how we consume things. I'm hoping that that is something that happens when things get back to normal, that we see that people are kind of focusing more on like supporting local agriculture and, you know, maybe they're doing things like small micro farming themselves instead of buying from massive companies that are doing bad things.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it sticks. And I know it seems like there's people that have been trying things like that during the pandemic, especially when they're maybe more time on their hands, they're at home.
Yeah.
I hope it stays that way. Like you said, it's hard to say what's going to stick. Are we just going to the pendulum swings back and we're even more into the way we were before because we can be.
Right.
I don't know. I don't have any inclination about what's going to happen, but it would be great if there's some lasting lessons that we like keep with us.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know what those are going to be, but I hope that there's something. It is surprising, like I said, to see so many people. I mean, the Heritage Hill, those 10 restaurants had their chili cook-off that they did a month ago almost. And to see 800 people flock to that thing and buy tickets and they did a great job of keeping people distant and restricting as much moving around as they possibly could. But I was very surprised to see 800 people just buy tickets, sell out the event, and just want to get out there. And
my personal feeling is we're in for the roaring 20s again.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to go right back to the way it was and then even more so.
Yeah. The PPP programs, the payroll protection program, the two rounds of it now. I don't know. Have you guys ever heard of or met Bud Laura? He's in Syracuse.
Yeah.
he's been doing a lot with restaurants during the pandemic. He owns a business called Restaurant QB that's like a buying group sort of for restaurants. But during the pandemic, the county executive's office was like trying to find their one person in different industries to kind of facilitate communication through, and Bud was that for restaurants. So he's been passing out all of like the information from the county to restaurants as much as he can. So one of the things that he was just telling me was, I guess there's some other grant program in place for restaurants where, and I probably am botching all of this, but it's essentially 2019 sales minus 2020 sales, and then factor in your what you got for PPP. Whatever that difference is, restaurants can now apply to get back in a grant. And there was a restaurant that had done that, had done the math on that, and they were saying, so if that's the case, I'm going to be getting back, it was like $300,000 in this grant. And they were like, yeah, that's accurate numbers. And he was like, I don't know what to do with that money. I don't have anything to spend it on. I feel like restaurants are about to have a lot of money. The food service industry in general, I just think people are going to get out and just start spending. There's going to be some excess from some of these programs that it's going to be like, we can grow now. We can do another location. We can do whatever we're going to do with it. But yeah, I feel like there's about to be a lot of money being spent in our industry.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the PPP things and like great programs, it's helpful, get us through the pandemic. Our situation in particular is a little weird, yeah. Especially with the grant you're talking about, 2019 versus 2020. Pandemic hits in March, right? We closed on our loan to do this big build out for the big new location end of February. We like a couple weeks. We started construction on March 9th last year.
Wow.
A week later, or the contractor's like, hey, we can have one person on site. That's it. So construction slows down, all that stuff. There's some added costs there. We moved during all of it into a space that's four times the size of our old space. It's a world of difference. And in that plan, it was always that our sales go up because our ability to just deliver to customers goes up.
Yeah.
So long story short, the second half of 2020, if you compare it to 2019, we did a little bit better than 2019.
Yeah.
But we didn't do as good as we should have done.
Right.
Like as our projections called for and as our new expenses called for.
Yeah.
So when they're just looking at revenue, mm-hmm. our revenue is not that, like it's a little bit better than 2019 for right. that one shop. Our university location suffered
yeah.
a lot. But just looking at like all that, there's all these nuances to it that don't get factored in.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, like there's no one you're communicating with about right. these loans, and the bank's doing 100 of them at a time, and they're doing their best. I get it. But it's all just, what's your revenue? What's this? Yeah. What's that? And there's no like, hey, this is our revenue, but there's a
right.
context there's a story. To it.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
yeah, it's definitely, yes, that's a very unique situation. I can't think of anybody else in our area that is going to be in that similar of a situation. But you're right. There is context for a lot of these places and, or for some of these places that needs to be factored into. I know talking with, somebody was just talking about how like the, representation at like a national to federal level for the restaurant world is all for chains and massive restaurant corporations. There really isn't any representation for the smaller locally owned businesses that are in food service. I know that they've started a Facebook group. So whatever that does, they've started a Facebook group for it in Central New York. And there's maybe 100 owners that are in that group. And people are just posting like links of like new things that are coming out and they're a lot, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I volunteered us and said that we would do the marketing for it, for that group for free and, you know, whatever we need to do for it. And hopefully one day that leads to something. That'd be great. You know, I know towards like November, maybe November, December, I was lucky enough to have somebody forward me accidentally a link to a Zoom meeting with, there was one with John Katko. There was another one with the county executive and the mayor's office and different restaurant owners. I think it was in December. And just being able to get to be a fly on the wall and hear them talk about all of their struggles and then try and ask for help. You know, like, hey, we need you to do this. We need you to do that. That was pretty eye-opening, you know, to see just how accessible it was. You know, they were making themselves, but also how little that they were able to do about it, about any of it. So what, besides opening up a new location, a bigger location, in the midst of the pandemic, what has been, what was one of the struggles of 2020 for Stronghearts?
It was a roller coaster. I mean, through it all, it was, there were ups and downs, big ups, big downs. And March, April, it was just like, I mean,
it was rough.
We were like, we had the towel in our hand, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Even though we're like, we had the loan, we're working on the construction, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, technically. It was dark. And I mean, we just did what we do and persisted and try to adapt and change. Yeah. And we've been honestly lucky that we haven't had positive staff, yeah, that's like any cool of those things. We've been diligent about everything. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, other than that, there's been times where like we did a Labor Day event, and it was our busiest day ever by a long shot. That really includes like any, like at the old location, that includes at the state fair, any of those days. And that was, I think, the peak of like the whole year is like things were looking up. SU students were coming back. It was Labor Day. The fair wasn't open, but we did kind of a fair homage event.
Yeah.
And we got a huge turnout, probably too big for us to handle, but it was almost like our grand opening event.
That's awesome.
At the new shop. That was our peak. And yeah, our biggest dip was March and April, but then back in November with the orange zone shutdown was similar feeling.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, here we go again, like unfortunately having to lay a few people off and reduce operations, shut the dining room down, just feel so horrible. And then I know you've been over it, but like the reasons behind it and everything is just kind of frustrating. It's like, didn't feel like I know you've been through it, but
No, I get it. It was, it was ridiculous. Thank God it's over.
Yeah.
There was like, I think of like Three Lives in downtown. I mean, their chef at the time and the owner had gone to another restaurant to like hang out on their off night and drink a few beers. And they just got laxed and just weren't doing any of the things they were supposed to do. Neither were the staff at the restaurant because everybody knew everybody. And that restaurant wound up having almost all of their staff test positive. And then the two from Three Lives they tested positive. So they had to shut down there wasn't another cook. There wasn't another person to run the operations. They had to shut down for 2 weeks. And on like the day before they were supposed to open back up, the orange zone went back into effect. So now they go into that. And, I mean, it's a wonder that they made it through the orange zone for sure. But yeah, there are some horror stories, you know. I was thinking about that actually, just, you know, I hear about things that happen in our community, and now that we're throughout the state and I follow stuff on social and like Buffalo and Rochester and Albany and Hudson Valley, I see some stuff from there, you know, those sectors of the state and what their communities are going through in food service. But I've been really curious lately as to what other small communities in other parts of the country have been experiencing. You know, we've unfortunately had to travel to Kentucky for loss of family members twice over the past year. And I can say being in Kentucky, The stereotypes are true. You know, we were at, you know, a family funeral, and all of us New Yorkers had our mask on. And this was back in, I think, late summer. We had our masks on, and our relatives that are from Kentucky didn't have them on. But as they would come up, they'd be like, all right, we'll put our masks on for you New Yorkers. You know, people just even kind of early days of the pandemic, yeah, it was just very different in different parts that we had traveled to.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't travel much, but I saw some of that even just with, depending on where you go around Syracuse, like you go to, I'm talking to a contractor, they're begrudgingly putting on their mask, if anything, you know, it's like type of people mindset.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, you know, political signaling and whether you're wearing your mask or not.
Yeah. My wife balances me because she's freaked out about all of that stuff. Not in a healthy way. She's just smart about it. But I've told this story on the podcast before. I'm going to tell it again because I love you, Rebecca, but this is hilarious. It was right after the first shutdown and things had opened back up. And the first restaurant we went out to dinner was Oh My Darling. And Anna, who has since moved back to Florida, but she was their manager at the time, and she had been in Florida during the shutdown, and then she had come back once things opened up. And we had parked on the street, like right in front of the restaurant. And in the early days, I was just an idiot and never put my mask over my nose because of freedom. And so we're walking like the two steps from the car to the front door of the restaurant. And my wife is giving me a hard time because my mask is under my nose. And I said, we're going to sit down in a minute. It doesn't matter. And as we walked in, Anna saw us and came up and gave me a big bear hug. And my wife, who's never met Anna before in her life, Anna gives her a big bear hug. And she's like, it's so great to see you. And we sat down and at the table, and I was like, really? You know, my mask is under my nose, but you just hugged a stranger. So
she was probably dying inside the whole time, right?
Yeah. So tell me something positive that's happened in your lives and in the restaurant in 2020.
We opened a new restaurant. You know, like Nick already explained, it was kind of right in the middle of all that, you know, and the restaurant that we have now on East Fayette Street has been the culmination of 2 years of very hard work and planning and dreaming and vision boarding, you know. So that came to fruition, and Nick can probably speak to the financials of it more than I could, but there's a chance that may not have happened if we didn't have the pandemic. Because there were some pretty dark days there where we were scrounging to pay bills. And then we got the first round, I think, of the PPP money and the EIDL money. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
That allowed us to kind of get over that hump.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like a saving grace. I mean, the big positive for us is we have this beautiful new restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's open and it's great and it's successful. So I think that's pretty positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was we closed on this loan at the end of February, and it allowed us to start construction and move, and we were trying to move that timeline as quick as possible to get out of the place we were, get in and not like overextend on payroll and all that stuff in the move.
Yeah.
Then the pandemic hits and there's like not much revenue coming in. Mm-hmm. We're minimizing payroll, but meanwhile, our construction timeline is expanding. We're like, how the hell do we make this work? Mm-hmm. Like, now we got the money in the loan, but now there's unforeseen circumstances. We need more to just like get to the point where we're moving. So that's where the PPP came in as like a saving grace and allowed us to just cover the payroll to get through March, April, May.
Yeah.
And we were able to get in there and open it up.
Yeah.
Largely due to that. I mean, we would have sunk without it.
That's awesome.
Because we were, you know, like taking on a lot with the loan, and there wasn't much wiggle room.
Yeah.
And then, got our feet swept out under us, you know?
Yeah. It's, yeah, I've really intentionally always, and having eat local, I've always tried to minimize risk. I had a furniture store back when I was 21 years old in 2008. It was like the worst possible time to open maybe any business. And we opened it up at the midway point of 2008, a furniture store of all things, you know, and at 21. Mm-hmm. I always joke and say it's not a joke. Unfortunately, it was real, but I was an idiot that I thought sales tax at the time was extra free money. no one ever told me that I'd be paid back to anyone. And so when we got our first sales tax bill, I was like, what is this? Like, what do you mean I owe this money?
It's like 3 months worth. Yeah.
Oh, man. That business going under was nothing in compared to, I'm sure, many other, you know, businesses that have gone under in the history of business. But still with this, I try to keep it as low risk as possible. I've never taken a paycheck from it. That hiring this person that we've just hired part-time is like the most risky thing that we've ever done financially. And it means that for the next probably 2 years, I won't pull a paycheck from the business. You know, I work a full-time mm-hmm. job to make sure it's not risky. And even with all of that and the pandemic, I was like, you know, sweating a couple of things. So I could not imagine the stress that it must be to have a restaurant or any substantial business and experience the things that you all have just experienced.
Yeah, I mean, it was stressful for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'm still feeling it. But I mean, we opened in 2008 as well.
Yeah.
And I think I can't remember us ever mentioning like, oh, there's a financial crisis going on before we opened it. Like we were just
too naive.
We were naive and just in our bubble. And I mean, once we started with Strong Hearts, it was just, we were working 120 hours a week.
Yeah.
We weren't
That's all we did.
Paying attention to anything else.
Right.
And anything we heard news-wise was from one of our staff members like, hey,
yeah,
this is going on, that's going on for a while. It was like that for most of 2008.
Yeah.
Maybe it got down to like 90, 80-hour weeks, but that felt like a blessing.
I remember the first months we were open, I was buying gas once a month because I was driving from home to work. That's all I did.
Yeah.
I wasn't
yeah.
even buying groceries because I was eating at work.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. I forgot that gas was really expensive then.
Yeah. And we didn't have money for it either.
Yeah.
We were paying enough to like pay the bills and that's it.
Yeah.
Call it a paycheck is kind of funny.
I was just thinking like I bought a Chrysler Sebring that year. I remember there was a promotion that for 1 year you got a gas card that meant no matter how much gas was, you paid $3.99 a gallon. Because then I think gas was like over like $4.50 or something. God. And so for 1 year you got, then I think I only used it for 6 months because then the price of gas dropped, or maybe it was $2.99. It was somewhere around there. But that was like their big promotion for Jeep and Chrysler was that you got this gas card.
Yeah.
yeah. Wow. So I was thinking about this when I was writing down questions and a lot of the questions I had were like about you starting and, you know, how you guys met. We've talked about that stuff. And we've talked about my insecurities when it comes to coming in about veganism and making sure I don't offend anybody. And we've covered those things, and thank you for that. But I don't know if you guys get a lot of credit for being a success. I mean, and I don't know if you feel like you're successful or not, but 13 years in the restaurant industry, no matter where you are, is a massive success. And then combine that with developing and growing and adding this new location. And I said it kind of when we started, like if someone asked me who are the staple restaurants in the Syracuse community, you would be there standing right next to a Possibilities or a Kitty Hoynes or any of the others that have been here forever. I won't ask you if that was intentional or not, but how did you do it? Give us a three-step guide. No, I'm just kidding. But do you consider that? Do you think about that? I mean, I'm sure the answer is no, but
I mean, it definitely feels good to hear that, you know, because we're in it. It's hard for us to see it, you know, mm-hmm. we're in the trenches, so it's hard to kind of zoom out and to hear that we're like an institution in the city, it's a huge compliment.
Yeah.
Of course we're flattered and we love it, but you know, that was never our intention to become a staple in Syracuse. We just wanted to make it till tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, and just keep on doing it one more day, one more day. So it feels good to get praise from your peers. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, there was an article in the paper, maybe it was last year, where the owner of Alto Cinco, mm-hmm. Gave us high praise. And like, that was just so cool to hear that like a respected peer, a colleague, someone that we looked up to, heap praise on us. It's a really good thing. It's a good feeling to know that your contemporaries and your colleagues think you're doing well.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you had anything to say, Nick. I mean, me looking at you wasn't putting you on the spot like you have to say.
No, it's fine. I mean, I just, like Joel said, it's a huge compliment. And like you said, it's not what we ever intended. We thought day one opening, like our plan was, it's going to be me and Joel hanging out, making some orders. People are going to come in, you know, trickle in, and we'll make them some food, and then we'll hang out and talk. And like, wake up call, like, people wanted what we were offering.
Yeah.
We found that it wasn't just the vegans. It wasn't just a few people.
Yeah.
It was a lot of people who were interested in something different. And that was refreshing. And it was like proof of concept a little bit. Like, it was great to see that there's people in Syracuse open to this, open to new things. And that's continued over the years. And we've continued to try to keep developing and getting better. And the biggest part of our move was to increase, like, improve the customer experience and just make it all around better for customers to come in and get their vegan food. So for you to include us in that list, or, you know, hypothetical list, is an honor. And I mean, we hope to grow on that and like keep expanding, keep serving good food to people.
Yeah. All right. Last two questions. And the first one is, what's the future for Strong Hearts?
Don't want to tip our hand too much here, but, you know, we know we have a good brand. We know we have a good product, and we do have aspirations to grow in the future. I'll kind of leave it at that. But we kind of got in on the ground floor of the vegan thing back in 2008.
Yeah.
Professionally. I mean, we personally have been in it for much, much longer, but we feel we got in at the beginning of that curve.
That's cool.
You know, and we have a product and a brand and a restaurant that we have built with ourselves. You know, we rolled up our sleeves and built it ourselves, and so it's very authentic.
Yeah.
And the reasons that we're doing it are very authentic and real. Mm-hmm. We're not interlopers trying to cash in on the vegan lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like, it is who we are.
Yeah.
You know, so we feel that we can take our brand and our restaurant and probably replicate it elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that's cool. Probably the future of Strong Hearts.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, the final question, one at a time, is if you could have dinner with anyone throughout human history, who would that be and why?
I don't know. There's a million things we could say, but I'm like kind of going through our milkshake heroes right now. Like, which one of those would I sit down with? Maybe Albert Einstein would be like interesting. Like, what the hell? I can't imagine you would just sit down and have a normal conversation.
Yeah, right.
You know? Yeah. Always like the oddballs.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I guess I'll go back to our milkshake menu too. Like Nick said, probably Nelson Mandela.
Okay.
His autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom, was a huge inspiration to me as a high schooler.
Yeah.
And just his example of being a living example of sacrifice and just total dedication to a cause was hugely inspirational to me as a 16-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool, man.
To go from political prisoner to president of your country.
Yeah.
And, you know, being in prison 27 years, I've actually been to his jail cell in
Robben
Island in South Africa.
Mm.
and just being there, it felt like you were on hallowed ground,
yeah.
you know, where a man of such stature and integrity lived for 27 years. So
yeah,
probably Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Nick, Joel, thank you so much for coming down. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. This was awesome.
Appreciate it.
Well, there it is, everybody. Thank you again for checking out the Eat Local New York podcast. It means so much to us. And as we said before, if you haven't, consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving us a review to let us know what you think of the podcast. That means a lot in the podcasting community. And that's all I have for you. You can stay up to date with everything we're doing by heading over to our website at eatlocalnystate.com, checking us out, seeing what we have going on. You can also pick up your Eat Local New York card there and find a list of the 150 participating restaurants that accept the Eat Local card all around New York State. Well, that's it. Thank you so much again for checking out the Eat Local New York podcast. We'll be right back.